So two questions I have on this question, when is it too late? The first is, if we believe our own statements, you know, that the world under capitalism is going to the dogs, when and how do we know when it's too late? Like I said, and how do we know it isn't already too late? And the second is, if we don't really believe this, why do we keep saying it? And what do we think we're achieving? Now, I'm going to nail my colours to the mast right away and say, I don't believe this. I don't think that the world is going to the dogs under capitalism, and I think we should stop saying it. Okay, so why don't I think this? Right. Now, there's no denying things look bad right now, no question. We've got global warming, we've got species extinction, we've got the rise of the far right in Europe, we've got certain countries with, you know, quasi-fascist dictatorships in it. For a lot of people right now, it's pretty bad, and it could go bad for a lot of humans in the future. So I don't imagine that I'm making light of the situation at all. But I don't think any of us seriously think that capitalism can actually destroy the planet. Not even a major war could do that. Not even a major nuclear war would actually destroy the planet. So what are we saying? That capitalism's going to give way to barbarism, you know, like a Mad Max movie. Even at that level, I think the tide of history is against that. I know you could argue this either way, but I think that modern humans are smart, connected, and increasingly switched on. We know that capitalism is adaptable. We've seen it adapt lots of times in the past. I think capitalism will be able to find ways to curb its own worst excesses. And I don't mean things like inequality. It'll certainly not cure that. But it will manage to claw its way back from the brink of Armageddon somehow, as it's currently trying, albeit rather feebly to do, when it's trying to do something about climate change. In short, then, I don't think our best argument is that capitalism is going to destroy the planet. In fact, I don't think it's any kind of argument at all. I actually think it's probably the worst argument that we've got, and it's probably one of the biggest arguments that's holding us back. Now, here's how I want to argue this. Now, I once expressed the view, backed up by some, well, it has to be said, fairly cursory research, that, you'll know intuitively that this is true, that bad news has a demotivating effect. And it also, according to some studies, it acts as a chemical dampener in certain regions of the brain, making it less likely that an individual will initiate positive action to change their circumstances. Now, the point I made then, which I still want to make, is that relentless threats from the media about things like global warming might be less useful and more counterproductive than more upbeat messages about what we as individuals can do, even if it only seems like trivial things like recycling and things like that. Anyway, the point is, bad news is bad for you. There are a number of studies that looked at this. A small study of news reading habits across the US and India and the UK identified news fatigue among participants that led to what the researchers described as a hope gap, which created a desire to tune out. The authors put it this way: perceived threat without efficacy of response is usually a recipe for disengagement or fatalism. On another occasion, I discovered some very interesting research. Some of you might know this, about things that archaeologists have been finding out lately. In particular, one place in Anatolia called, I don't know how to pronounce this, Göbekli Tepe. Those of you who know it, you'll know it's a large complex of concentric ring-like structures, stone structures, 20 foot high, 20 tons each. It looks very much like a temple complex. In fact, that's what it's called, a temple complex, but nobody really knows what it's for at all. And the thing about it is that according to the received wisdom and also the received Marxist wisdom, materialist wisdom, necessity is the mother of invention. People shouldn't have started building things like Göbekli Tepe until long after they'd settled into agriculture, farming, and created villages and towns. Göbekli Tepe isn't from the agricultural era of 6000 BC. It's between 10 and 20,000 years old. It predates farming and it predates villages. And what's more, it's not the only place. There are places in Jordan and also Syria that are pre-agricultural villages. The best guess, well, the one I like anyway about Göbekli Tepe, is that it's a festival meeting site for hunter-gatherer tribes, a sort of Paleolithic Glastonbury. Now, the point I'm making here is that what the archaeologists are saying is that maybe we've got it all wrong, that it's not the case that great innovation in amongst humans is driven by necessity and desperation. It could be that it's good times that drive progress, not the bad times. Good times, after all, are when people are feeling healthy, relaxed, safe, satisfied, in a mood to be curious, in a mood to be experimental and say, well, we've always done it this way, but what about if I try it some other way? When things are good, there aren't the high stakes of a failure. But when things are bad, you can't risk failure. And also, it's been known amongst some Scandinavian communities that when farming failed, they went back to hunting and gathering. So it's not the case that hunting and gathering is necessarily more marginal than farming. Anyway, that's a kind of prehistoric aside. But going back to the capitalist media, look how the capitalist media treats news. Think about what the Daily Express does every day in the Mail. They're devoted to scaring the pants off people and convincing them that the end times are near. It's just like out of the Bible. And what good's going to come of that? Well, none at all. And certainly no revolutionary motivation. Of course it's not. It's just going to depress people. If depressing people made socialists, the Daily Express would stop it at once. But what do we do? Well, we ape the capitalist press. We do exactly the same as then. We preach the same doom and gloom the rest of them do. Why aren't we smarter than this? Why are we still obsessed with trying to scare people into revolution when all our experience says that it doesn't work? And the evidence that I've suggested from prehistory even suggests we've got it completely back to front. It's not, people don't get scared into innovation and change. They get encouraged into it by success. Now, I know I asked the question, when is it too late? But we can't predict a thing like that. And if the date's already passed, we might as well give up and enjoy a last whiskey and soda while the ship goes down. But instead of contemplating all of that like some millenarian cult, why don't we instead contemplate the end of our own negative way of doing propaganda? Because we want to motivate people, surely, not depress them into apathy and fatalism. Instead of focusing on the history of capitalism's failures and extending that failure forever into the future, why don't we talk about the history of humanity's successes and extend that into the future, with the next social upgrade being world socialism? I mean, I don't know about you, but thinking about the future in that way is much more likely to get me up out of my armchair and doing stuff. So that's my take on that. Over to you. What's everybody got to say? Now tear me to shreds. Just join in, anybody. We're not doing the chair thing.
Just want to say amen to that, Paddy.
Say that again, Joe. I didn't catch that.
I said amen to that. I agree absolutely with what you said.
Oh, well, okay then.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so do I. I don't think we do say that it's too late. Some members do, but I don't think the party says it's too late. In fact, we've had this argument all the time on the website forum. There's one member that persistently puts stuff on there about the end of the world is nigh. If it's not global warming, it's the tundra exploding or something like that. You know, and So I don't think we do say that. But I remember going to a debate between the Green Party and Tony Benn. And of course, this was 30 years ago, by the way, and the Green Party speaker was saying, oh, in 40 years, we'll all be dead. It's doom and gloom. And Tony Benn made the point that, you know, revolutions are not caused but through fear, but through hope. And I think, you know, I think on this occasion, Ben was right, and the Green Party doom and gloomsters were wrong. But I agree with what you said, but I don't think the party does say it's too late. I mean, individual members do, but I don't think the party as such does.
Well, I think I maybe didn't make myself quite clear. I know that the party doesn't say that. The party's never said that it's too late. Why would it say that? It would be talking itself out of business altogether. It's simply that the party reflects the capitalist news media's obsession with negative news about how shit everything is. That, I think, is true. And I think we do that relentlessly in everything that we produce.
I don't know if I agree with it, as Adam probably knows. The UN are saying we've got 12 years. Now, there's no way I'm saying the planet's, no matter what we do, the planet's going to go on. But I think there's a good chance humans could quite easily wipe themselves out with. What Adam just after mentioning, actually kind of the environmental disaster that you're talking about and all, like increasing desertification and increasing heat and all the rest of it, and then competition there, the usual kind of capitalist competition there, scarce resources. And the way America and China are facing after now, if you add into the mix the possible use of nuclear weapons and TAPA, I mean, as usual, this year, just last week, there's been 100 degree temperatures in Siberia and some massive ice caps melting. It might not wipe out everybody, but it's going to wipe out a hell of a lot of people and make life a hell of a lot more difficult for a hell of a lot more people. I don't think you should be shying away from that or trying to sugarcoat it. And I don't think sort of saying everything's going to be all right. Get through it is particularly helpful either.
Yeah, but Malcolm, I think
we should be realistic rather than optimistic or pessimistic.
Yeah, I don't think you're taking quite from what the message from what I said that I intended. I'm not suggesting that we all become a bunch of Pollyannas saying everything's wonderful. I already said that I'm not shying away from that. But you've got the rest of the capitalist media to tell everybody how bad things are. Nobody, not on the left either, nobody ever puts an encouraging word forward about how we can change society. Nobody does it, and we don't either.
We can, and we should. I think that's actually, we should be making the most of this. I mean, with plans for this COPED summit in November in Glasgow, the Dorries plans to make the most of that, but because of this coronavirus, it was disrupted. I think we can get a lot of, we could get a lot of leeway out of people's justifiable environmental concerns. I don't really think it's something we should totally... I mean, I know what you're saying, but I don't think it's something we should shy away from either.
Paddy, you use the word relentlessly. I don't think the party does it relentlessly. It does it part of the time, and I sort of fall halfway between what you're saying and what Adam's saying. I mean, I remember many years ago there was emblazoned on the front of the Socialist Standard were the words, capitalism is killing you, or capitalism is killing us. I can't quite remember. And I thought, no, I myself at the time thought this isn't a good message for all sorts of reason. So not true that the Socialist Standard is the official mouthpiece of the party. So It's not true that the party never does this, but he does do it sometime. But I mean, I think I remember a short time ago there was a sort of weekend school in London, in East London. Some of us who are here now were at that, and it was about the environment. And I think the broad consensus was that capitalism will find a way of surviving the climate crisis, for example, and the Earth won't be wiped out. And I think, this is our position. I mean, capitalism is, as you said, Paddy, tremendously resourceful, in the branch I'm in Swansea, we had an old member whose argument was that we're not going to get socialism until capitalism gives us more and people have got a bit of sort of time and leisure to actually think about how a far better society can be organized. His argument is capitalism has already raised living standards dramatically. And although there are going to be a few dips and troughs, in the long term, it's going to carry on doing so. And that, broadly speaking, although, you know, lots of people in the world still live in sort of dire circumstances, but broadly speaking, that is the case. In the same way, I don't know whether this is right or wrong, but a number of years ago, a book was published called The Skeptical Environmentalist. Remember the name of the author, he was a Dutchman called Bjorn Lomborg. And he argued that, we need the environment's ultra important. We need to look at it, husband it, etc. But what human beings do is when they first start innovating, they usually make a mess. They make a mess of things and then they gradually realize what they're doing and they put it right. Okay, I know a strict environmentalist would say maybe it's too late to do that, but is it? Certainly the lesson of history is that it isn't. So anyway, just a few words there.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's interesting, actually. I mean, there's an example of a change in environmental policy that could bear that out, actually. If you remember back in the 1980s, and everybody was screaming about the ozone hole because they'd only really recently discovered it through new imaging techniques from satellites. They didn't know it was there before. And as soon as they saw it, they found this hole over the Antarctic. It was the size of Europe. It was gigantic. And, of course, everybody went into a case of the headless chickens and, oh my God, the end of the world is nigh, sort of thing. The capitalist governments and major corporations sort of got together and said, okay, what's causing this? Well, it's this CFCs thing. Okay, well, can we get something else instead? Well, yeah. Okay, well, if we all do it, it'll spread the cost. And, arguably that was a success for capitalism. And there is still a hole over the Antarctic, by the way. It's still pretty big, but it's not anywhere near as big as it was. So that's kind of gone away, really. Similarly with stories about acid rain. I mean, that's still a problem if you chuck loads of sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere from coal-fired power stations. But that's kind of going away a bit. And so a lot of the things that people made such a hoo-ha about in the 70s and 80s, you don't hear so much about now because they are quietly getting dealt with in some way. And I do agree, actually, with something that, Adam said. Well, Adam and Howard both said is that, actually, we do say sort of quite positive things at sometimes. I'm not denying that, and I certainly don't think we're the worst by any means. I think we're probably far more balanced and nuanced than you tend to see, certainly amongst environmental groups and amongst the left. They've really got an axe to grind about how bad things are. And they have really got a bad case of the sort of hellfire approach, where they just convince that if you just scare people to death, that will make them that will motivate them. I still think that we follow this agenda, we follow this kind of approach too much in the way that we do things. What I suppose I'm saying is that I would argue for a conscious strategy of not doing that, not just leaving it to individuals to occasionally make positive points, but actually having a look at the way we do propaganda in the party and say, does this measure up? Is this doing what we want it to do? Is this sending out the message we want to send out? And having an actual, and that's what I'm hoping this discussion is about, is saying, let's look at it. Let's look at it dispassionately. What result do we want? What is it that we want people to do? And are we going about it in the right way to motivate them? I would say we're still not doing, despite the fact that we're not as bad as these other groups.
I think what I'm kind of arguing, Paddy, is, I'm not arguing despair in the face of environmental degradation or whatever. I think we should be pointing out that capitalism is making it worse, that global warming, for instance. I mean, yeah, you and Adam seem quite adamant that capitalism will fix it. I'm not so sure capitalism will fix global warming. It might already be too late, but I mean, it's still not going to, still doubt it's going to wipe everybody off the face of the earth, but who hasn't seen the effects of it? No. I mean, I think Janet's own, she wrote a great piece recently about the floods in Kerala. It's that kind of, I think we should be making the point that we, a socialist, could tackle environmental degradation a hell of a lot better and a hell of a lot quicker than the capitalists. And we could also be pointing out that the capitalists have got bolt holes in places like Australia and all the rest that they want for ones that are scared of it. They've got their places ready to bolt away to in case the worst does happen. Do you know what I mean?
I think part of it, that capitalism will sort of get through this thing okay, or a proportion of the global population. As socialists, we tend to consider all of the world's population, not just some of it. We are concerned about people who don't get enough food, or they earn so little that they can't live properly. You know, all the general things that we hear about, where a great percentage of the world's population have a bloody hard time of it. Can I just finish this? Capitalists are very happy, and you hear, you know, you could quote individuals who said it. They actually don't give a damn in general. They're quite happy for, like, what, 250,000 children or something to die in Iraq, after Iraq, whatever. I don't know how many it is. It's a massive amount. And that you've heard others say, oh, yeah, let them die. You know what history has done to people in different parts of the world from empire. They starve people deliberately and not really given a damn about what happens to them. Now, our position is very, very different from that. We feel that everybody should have their position in the world. They should have their chance. They should have their enough food to eat, etc., all that kind of thing. So for me, it's like, yeah, capitalism might be able to sort some of the things, but who are they going to sort it for? They're not going to sort it equitably. That's my point.
Right. I think we know the case here, don't we, Janet? I'm talking about a question of emphasis. Now, we get articles for the Standard, and we've been getting them for decades. And despite the policy that we have, we quite often get articles that do the usual thing, which is 50 things that are wrong with capitalism, and in the last paragraph, socialism will fix it all. Now, I don't need to spell out to you where the lack of balance in that article is, because We just don't bother arguing for the case for socialism. What we spend our entire time doing in the article is slagging off capitalism, which is what everybody else does. Now, what would have been better is if those articles read 50 reasons why socialism will be better than capitalism, and the last paragraph being, but we can't do it at the moment because capitalism won't let us. That's the complete opposite way around. It's all the positive reasons why socialism will be better, and then one bad thing about capitalism at the end. That's what I'm talking about, the change of emphasis. We're not changing the case, we're changing the emphasis on the case, and that's what I'm describing.
I think you're appropriate in blame there on capitalism, Paddy, which doesn't strike true, you know. It isn't a quick question of capitalism not letting us. It's a question of working class consciousness not letting us. That's what the problem is. I agree with you, though, that there's a lack of balance in many an article in the Standard, and it always ends off like, you know, change the system, blah, 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 without giving any explanation or reason. But then again, that would be really difficult because you usually find when you start writing an article about the wrongs of capitalism and how it's going, all the shit and all the rest of it, that takes up, you know, two pages of A4 just about, right? And the Standard very rarely allows articles to continue over, right? You know, so you turn around and give in a response to what's wrong with capitalism, and then you'd have to give another issue of putting the positives of socialism. So it's pretty difficult, it is. So.
Well, Brian, let me put this to you, right? I come down the pub with you one night, and I say to you, Brian, you've got a shit car. I'll give you 50 reasons why your car is shit. And I list them, 50, why your car is shit. And you nod after each one. You go, you're right. Yep, yep, you're right. No, that doesn't work. You're right. At the end of my 50 reasons, I say, right, now buy my car. Can you see the logic, or the logical gap between the two sets of arguments? Just because your car's shit doesn't mean that mine's actually better or you should buy it. But I haven't made the case for you to buy my car. All I've done is I've told you what you already know. That's what we do in socialist art, in our articles.
I think you keep by using a car as a metaphor, you're broaching on your explanation of capitalism as a mechanistic way of explaining what's going wrong. But there again, you know, your 50 reasons, right, would also require 50 explanations. And each one and every explanation more than likely would take up an article in the Social Standard. Right? So, you know, it's not a logical explanation or a sequence of things, right? It's a matter of striking a balance, like you've said, right? Between turning around and saying, yes, this is the wrong of capitalism, keep it short, right? And then putting that balance in by turning around and saying, and this would be the social solution, et cetera, et cetera. Making it a bit longer because you've got advantage of putting the socialist explanation with more clarity.
Right, you haven't got time for all that, Brian. Let me explain to you, as I'm sure you know, what a salesperson does, right? When I'm trying to sell you a car, I don't bother telling you how bad your car is because you already know that. What I'm going to do is I'm not going to give you 50 reasons because you haven't got that much attention span. I'm going to give you 5 reasons. I'm going to say, this car does 120 to the gallon. And I'll assume you're going to say to yourself, shit, mine doesn't do that. Then I'm going to say, this car's got power steering. And you're going to go, shit, mine hasn't got that. This car's got electric windows and sunroof. And you think, Mine hasn't got that either. So I don't need to tell you anything about your car, how bad it is, because you already know it. All I have to do is tell you how good this car is. Five reasons, that'll do it, you're sold. That's what I think we should do, and we don't ever do that. We never say five reasons why socialism is better starting now, and then make people can see for themselves that it's better than capitalism. That's what I'm talking about, the change of emphasis.
I agree with you there. Like I said right at the beginning, I don't think there's sufficient emphasis on an explanation for socialism.
And the daft thing is, we're the best organisation to do this because we've got the clearest idea of what we want. If you look at most of the left, they don't have a clue. I ask most of their people what socialism is or what they think it is, and they'll probably burble something vaguely about Marx, but they won't really have an idea. We're actually the best organisation for that point of view. That's why we're in it, because we've got the clearest picture. But we don't convey that. We just bang on about capitalism just like everyone else, and then wonder why no one can tell the difference between us and the rest of the left.
But then again, you know, when you say we bang on about capitalism, the reason why we bang on about capitalism is because we know very well that the working class do not understand how capitalism works, and it certainly doesn't work in their own interest. That's the reason why we bang on about capitalism.
Yeah,
it's like
I'm boring you about how bad your car is. You don't need to know how. You don't need to understand why your car doesn't work. You need to understand that mine's better, and you want to buy it. That's what you need to know.
I think what you're saying, Paddy, is instead of listing 50 problems, list 50 solutions. Basically, instead of saying here's 50 problems with capitalism, here's 50 solutions to it.
Yeah, not 50, but you know, whatever, you know, 10, 20.
Five, well.
Yeah.
But is this you banging on about your communist kitchen and cook shops of the future again?
Absolutely.
I think one of the problems is most people's experience of capitalism is, you know, that things have got slightly better for them or whatever, although it's not always the case, especially with coronavirus and the economy going into decline or whatever. But, I mean, in the world, if you look at the world in the last sort of 30 years, there's probably less war, although there is some war, and there's increased in income for people. Even the poorest people are slightly better off than they were 30 years ago. But we don't say that, really. You know, we don't say capitalism's improving things in certain parts of the world. You know, we tend not to say that. We tend to say everything's bad and it's getting worse and climate's going to cause problems. And, you know, I don't know. I think sometimes, I mean, you people who are pro-capitalism can argue, you know, that there's less people living on a dollar a day now or whatever, or less than a dollar a day in the world. And there's more people getting a higher standard of living in certain parts of the world. But I mean, that's just, you know, we've got to accept that, really, you know. But we can put forward socialism, as Paddy said. It's like, you know, socialism's better than capitalism. Then we've got to emphasise that, really, yeah.
They ran some polls not very long ago. I remember reading about it, where they asked people, did they think on balance that absolute poverty in the world had gone down, gone up, or was roughly the same over the past 30-year period? And I thought something like 60% of people, this was in America and also in the UK, 60% of people thought that absolute poverty had gone up, and about 20% thought it had got the same. And in fact, absolute poverty has dropped by a massive degree in the last 20 to 30 years. But why don't we see this in left propaganda? Well, because it apparently seems to undermine their case. But this is just my point. It doesn't undermine the case at all. What it says is that there are things that we can do and that are happening now, and we can accelerate that process. So there are things even happening under capitalism that are making things better. The flip side of that, though, is that although absolute poverty has gone down a lot, relative poverty has massively expanded because, of course, the rich have got orders of magnitude richer in the last 30 years. So that's the other side of the thing. That's something that capitalism won't fix. So, of course, we don't need to gloss over that point.
Another point that's kind of hard.
In in that case, Fanny, you know, I would turn around and argue that, yes, the standard of living might have gone up, but the quality of life has gone down.
Well, it hasn't gone down. That's the point. Absolute poverty has gone down in real terms right around the world.
I said the quality of life has gone down.
Yeah, but that's just a kind of abstract term that means a lot of things to a lot of different people, surely. I think the point I'm making...
The standard of living.
No, the point I'm making about the poll is that most people think things are getting worse in the world. Now, what does that tell you about the world? Well, I think what it tells you is that people think you can't do anything about anything because it's all getting worse. It's just getting worse and worse. You can't do anything. It's impossible. The poor will always be with us and all this sort of thing. But if you can show, actually, look, the absolute number of people in absolute poverty has gone down in the last 30 years. In socialism, we could accelerate this process massively. If you can show that there are changes, even in capitalism, but that we could make it so much faster in socialism if we upgrade the whole system, the whole global system, that's a much more positive message we're putting out. It means that you can do stuff. You actually can do stuff, and stuff is even happening now. We'll just make it happen faster. That's a good message to be putting out to people, not the message that they can't do anything, they might as well give up.
Just for one point that I'd like to make is that you just quoted a poll there. But what's happening now in the United States? They're having these political conventions. I mean, they're online. But people are going along with the idea that Biden will make a bloody difference and that things can be done. It's a bit of a nonsense, Paddy, what you're saying, to say that people just give up this idea if there's any possibility of any change. That's it.
So you dropped out there a bit, Steve. I didn't quite catch what you were saying at the end there.
Sorry. Right, okay. So I disagree with this idea that the people don't think that there's nothing can be done. I think this is proven by the fact that you've got all these people in America now who are preparing for campaigning to get Joe Biden elected. And they really do think that there's something can be done by the fact that they've got that this bloke has now decided that it's a good idea to have a black woman as a running mate. Yeah. So I think you're painting things a bit too black.
Well, I think that's a dead hand of apathy, raising an indolent finger once every 5 years and then collapsing back into hopelessness. That's what I think about elections in America. That those people who you think are so hopeful now, after the elections in November, they'll just collapse back into the same sort of nihilism that they spend most of their time in. This is just the politics of desperation speaking. That's not real hope.
I think it's a case of definitions in that. So there aren't any people who are political activists in the States. That's what you seem to be saying.
Well, why would I say that? We're activists.
Not in the States.
Yeah, but anywhere.
Right. I just think you overstated your case about this, about a lack of desire for change.
I didn't say that. I said there's a lack of hope.
Well, by quoting the poll, you seem to be doing that. That's what you seem to be right. Okay, that's how it came across anyway.
Yeah, I think the news media feeds that and sustains that lack of hope. It encourages that sense of hopelessness, which means that populations will never revolt. They'll never fight back. What you need to fight back is a sense that you actually can fight back, that you've got collective power. I mean, capitalist news media doesn't want us to think that. So it'll do everything in its power to give us the message that will most undermine that. And what is that? How does it do that? By giving us a constant diet of negative news stories designed to make us give up. And I think that's why we need to do the opposite, because the left does that as well. The left plays that game. The environmental lobby plays that game. I think we've got to do the opposite, because nobody else will if we don't.
I don't know about doing the opposite, but I think we need to get a better balance. I'm always a little bit concerned about when people say, you know, we need to be really positive about this. Because, you know, I think I go online sometimes and I talk to people and they say, and the moment you start sort of getting kind of enthusiastic about socialism, the response is, oh, it'll never work. It's just utopia and you're a dreamer, this kind of stuff. So I think we need to be just a little bit careful how we pitch this. I think, yeah, I'm really with you in terms of, you know, sort of giving a more positive message. But we don't want to come across as sort of naive dreamers who just like are sort of obsessively positive about stuff. We need some kind of balance about it. And by the way, I'm not quite sure your figures about poverty, absolute poverty declining in the world, because I see those figures. All those figures, they come from institutions like the World Bank. And then I see other figures that are actually being produced, them sort of pointing out that this sort of improvement of sort of fewer and fewer people living on, what is it, $1.67 a day is, yeah, certainly that's improving. But if you take another figure, like people living on $6 a day, more and more people are having to live under $6 a day. I think it all depends on which figures you take on those. I don't know enough about it to be able to make a definite statement one way or the other. But I think there is a line of evidence that is actually countering that. But that's in a way that's beside, you know, the main point that's being made here.
Well, I got these from a number of charts from a New Scientist review of a new book, and I actually wrote to New Scientist and queried it because I pointed to some discrepancies in the charts, and they wrote back and said, thanks very much for your letter. You're correct, we mislabeled one of the charts. And and when they explained how they mislabeled it, the charts actually worked. So, because I was surprised as well. You know, I'm not saying I was somehow smarter than everybody else. I was surprised too. But when I looked into it, the charts did work, and I looked into the background of some of them, and as far as I can work out, they're correct.
It depends. Yeah, sure. Now, I can't say for certain, but I have seen figures from and arguments from what seem to be trustworthy sources. World Health Organization sources and things, which seem to counter the arguments that are put forward on the basis of data. A lot of this data comes from organizations like the World Health Organization, the World Bank, and et cetera. And, I have seen that challenged. So I don't know, but, you know, I just want to, you know, just sort of raise that as an issue. But we don't sort of just go hairing off, assuming that's necessarily correct. The New Scientist is an interesting magazine, but it's the New Scientist is highly speculative and it's not always accurate. I mean, it does check its facts very well, but it doesn't always check them perfectly.
Just going back to your earlier point of like, oh well, you know, we might be dismissed as dreamers. I mean, hello. Sorry, Richard, where have you been? Because for the last 30 years I've been in the party, that is how we get dismissed anyway. So we're always going to encounter people that say, it'll never work. But those aren't the people I'm talking about. The people I'm talking about that we should be reaching are the people who think it might work but are too despondent to do anything. I mean, we've got people in this party who already agree with us, but I suspect are too despondent and apathetic to join in activity. We don't have, you know, there are people who could be on this Discord site who aren't. And, you know, I suspect despondency has a lot to do with that. I can't prove that with figures in a chart, of course.
Oh, I'm broadly with you. I'm not arguing against you. I'm just sort of sounding a slight note of caution that you know, we need to tailor our, sort of what we say to the attitudes of people. See, the problem is there's a lot of people out there with very negative attitudes, you know, and if you come up to somebody with a really negative attitude saying, actually, no, look, we've got this really positive case, you will risk driving them further into their negativity. So it's a matter of matching, you know, sort of being just a little bit cautious about this, I think. But though I think we can do with being more positive. I'm fundamentally in agreement with that. One thing that just occurs to me off the top of the head, I don't know how useful or interesting this is, but I've recently been having rather curious conversations with some unusual people, giving really, really positive sort of, claims that they can renovate the world and they can save the world from all its, blackness and bleakness at the moment. And they happen to be religious organizations. I've been talking to the Baha'is, and I've been talking to a rare group of Kabbalists. And, they're really pumping this stuff out at the moment and, onto the web. And they're getting lots and lots of positive responses from people who are looking for positive messages. But I suspect they're the kind of people that would sort of just like flinch if you mentioned the word socialism and with all the negative connotations it actually has. They're people that are looking for fluffy, very sort of vague solutions, you know, sort of new agey type solutions to this kind of thing. And, I'm just a little bit worried. I'm not worried about what you're saying, no, because I don't think socialists would go over the top about it. But, you know, you get the opposite. I mean, if you look online at the moment, what is the most dominant left trend that is really pulling in the youngsters at the moment? What is it? And if you look on it, to my shock recently, I discovered that it's a resurgence of really hardcore Stalinism. If you go onto YouTube and if you Google left-wing YouTubers, up comes dozens and dozens and dozens of these Stalinist guys. And they're really pumping it. And apparently in America, they're really bringing people in with this really kind of hard-bitten message. And that I think is a bit scary. Sorry, I've got off track now, so I'm going to shut up with it.
I can't help thinking, Richard, if I was in America and the only options that seemed open to me were Trump or Stalinism. You know what I mean? I think if that's how the options are presented to you, you know, you can kind of see. But, you know, just to go back to your earlier point, you know, of course, there are always going to be people who are negative, who, you know, if you confront them with a positive view, they'll simply retrench. Of course, they're going to do that. But then they're going to retrench anyway, aren't they? Because if you respond with their negativism, with your negativism, well, they'll doubly retrench. So there are certain sets of people you're not going to get anywhere with, and we know that. There are people who are just not going to listen to anything you say, no matter what you say, positive or negative. We know that. I'm not talking about those people who really won't listen. I'm suggesting that there is a whole tranche of society that we could influence one way or the other to feel bad about the world or maybe feel a bit more positive about the world, and that we want to think about that as part of a strategy that we actively and consciously adopt rather than just let the individual writers write just what they like without any sense of oversight, without any sense of strategy, and just put it all out there and just cross our fingers and hope for the best. What I'm suggesting is we think about a conscious approach that includes this idea of positivity.
A few months ago, I saw a thing in an ICC paper or whatever saying capitalism can never solve homelessness. Then you get the coronavirus and them putting all the homeless people into hotels. So, you know, capitalism could solve homelessness if it wanted to, really. You know? And another thing, you say that the left are always pessimistic. I remember coming across the WRP years ago, and it was young people, and they were telling me the revolution was going to be next week. Or, you know, they were very upbeat about the revolution. And, of course, it never comes next week, so then they get disillusioned. But, I mean, we can't do that. We can't tell workers, you know, we're going to get the revolution next week. We've got to be realistic and say, you know, this is the state of affairs. There's only a small number of us, but we've got this idea of a better society. I mean, I'm with you, Paddy, but I think all the left aren't always pessimistic. Some of them are overly optimistic about things, especially about revolution. They asked the WRP were always still do that. I think. Yeah.
Well, that's not optimism. That's delusion, and that's I know and that. that's telling lies. I am not talking. Talking about telling lies, as you know perfectly well. This goes back to what Richard was saying about keeping our feet on the ground and not saying things that aren't true and not saying things that are under-researched. And all of that, and I absolutely agree with that. Of course we're not going to do that. That's not the plan at all. We'd make idiots of ourselves if we started doing that. So, you know, these are not realistic objections, I don't think.
Wasn't meant as an objection. I mean, I was just stating what they're like around the WRP or whatever.
The point Dougie was making there was rather the kind of point I was making earlier as well. Rather than being pessimistic or optimistic, be realistic. I mean, you're kind of arguing that all this leads to despondency, but that Extinction Rebellion and all the other kind of Greta Thunberg and all these other environmental movements, these people don't seem very despondent, they seem angry. So if we could put our message across, we're the solution. We're not going to get despondent. They're going to get angry and they might want to get up and help change the world instead of lying about despondently doing whatever. But I think we should stay realistic rather than either optimistic or pessimistic.
Well, of course, realistic is one of those, another one of those words that means anything you want it to mean, doesn't it?
Well, the realistic, I mean, where is science, basically, where the scientific consensus. I mean, another thing that's happening now is the doomsday clock is closer to midnight than it's ever been. Carry on with America and China at the moment, they're talking about using tactical nuclear weapons again. And I think somebody was talking about religion earlier. There's that whole craziness happening in America now that think this is the literal biblical Armageddon's coming and Trump's going to save us and all the rest of it. I mean, these people are seriously considering the use of tactical nuclear weapons. If we start letting off nuclear bombs and tapping the global warming and everything, it might not wipe the whole human race out, but it's going to send us back to the Stone Age. You know what I mean?
This is an example of your realism, is it? I mean, the doomsday clock is an abstract thought experiment. It's not a real thing. It was made up by some scientists who said, if you take the entire history of the world and you stretch it across, you hold your arms out and you stretch it from one set of fingertips to the other set of fingertips, we, the human race, the whole of human history and prehistory exists at the very fingernail ends of one end of that stretch. And the right at the end is midnight. If you take the whole history of the world as one day, then we're right close to midnight. Well, that's just an abstract thought experiment. Midnight doesn't really exist. That is the doomsday clock and it's There is no midnight. It's just an abstract idea.
Midnight and the doomsday clock is when the bombs start falling. You're kind of talking about the age of the universe and all the rest of it, and what we're just humanity's a fingertip. I mean, maybe it is connected to the doomsday clock, but if it is, it's news to me. But I think the doomsday clock is the scientists and the people that put into it use the political kind of realities of the day to say how close or how far away the bombs are dropping, you know what I mean? And I think at the moment, these idiots are definitely thinking they're using nuclear weapons again.
Yeah, but they're scientists, aren't they? Not Nostradamus. We're not closer to it now than we were during the Cuban Missile Crisis, for example.
The last I looked, it was a couple of seconds away from midnight, and I think it's quite scary that politicians, no scientists, politicians in the US and military strategists or seriously consider the use of what they call limited nuclear weapons or whatever. I mean, I don't think that's the sort we should be shying away from. And if I think they're telling people about this, if they don't know about it, they're not going to get despondent. If they've got half a brain in their head, they're going to get angry and want to do something about it, especially if we provide the solution. The solution is get rid of all your nuclear weapons. It's quite an easy solution.
Yeah, but Malcolm, it blatantly doesn't work trying to make people angry. We've been trying to do this for 100 years. It doesn't work. Isn't it time we looked at something that might work instead?
What about making people optimistic? That's just an abstract as well, isn't it?
Well, it's one we haven't tried, like socialism, in fact.
Well, I actually wasn't saying tried to make people angry. I was saying people are angry. People are getting angry on themselves. People that Extinction Rebellion, for instance, they're already angry. Unfortunately, they don't know the solution. That Greta Thunberg's already angry. Unfortunately, she doesn't know the solution. We tell the people, look, there's a simple solution. They can put their anger to use.
Yeah, but they're not doing, are they? They're taking out their anger on other people in the working class. That's what usually happens with anger amongst the working class. The right wing have got plenty of anger. If you want to be angry, there are plenty of places you can go and take it out on somebody. I don't think that's a constructive emotion for socialists to have.
Exactly, arguing this, but factual evidence doesn't always lead to despondency. Sometimes it can lead to anger. I wasn't saying let's all get angry and go start throwing bombs at the police or anything. What I was basically saying was, this environmental movement are pretty clued up in what's happening with the environment at the moment. A lot of them are upset about it. If we tell them there's a simple solution to it, because obviously you're saying they don't know the solution, but if we can put out that, look, a simple solution to this, abolish capitalism, we can start solving these problems. It doesn't always lead to despondency. Being realistic doesn't always lead to despondency, or being pessimistic, or whatever you want to call it.
You know, Paddy, being told that being realistic can mean anything that you want it to mean. You said that about 5 minutes ago. You could say the same thing about, if you're going to say that, you say the same thing about socialism, surely. It can mean whatever you want it to mean. Now, I'm a realist. In fact, I would go further and say, in terms of the future of the planet, I'm a pessimist. You know, I look at the reality of reports from credible scientists, where methane, dangerous, I can't think of the word at the moment, greenhouse gas than CO2 ever is boiling out of the seabed in the Arctic. It's exploding out of the tundra. Now, you know, because of global warming, the Larsen Sea ice shelf in Antarctica, the biggest ice shelf, has broken away. It's going to move towards warmer waters. Okay, the Greenland ice cap is sliding towards the sea. Now, sea level rises. We've already got a situation where a third of Bangladesh is underwater. The sea level rises. That's gonna carry on. Now, you're going to have massive population movements. What are we going to, you know, what's the world going to do? What are the capitalists going to do? They're going to do what India does now, which is to machine gun the poor fuckers who are trying to cross the border out of Bangladesh and places, the low-lying areas, because that's what's happening there. You're going to have the Royal Navy in the channel stopping people who are legally entitled to get into rowing boats or rubber dinghies and cross the channel to England to ask for asylum. They're legally entitled to do that. They're not breaking any law. You know, being realistic about the situation. You know, I'm not apathetic. You know, I'm realistic about the future of what I see coming, but I'm not apathetic. And I'm on Discord, by the way. As socialists, we need to put the socialist case for how we're going to deal with the catastrophe that's coming, the social catastrophe that's coming as a result of climate change. And if you want to look at the nuclear issue and get into that, I suggest that people read the Doomsday Machine by Daniel Ellsberg. Everybody's heard of him, the Pentagon Papers and all the rest of it. Read that. You know, these people, the people that have their fingers on or near the buttons, and it's not just presidents and prime ministers, it's delegated down. These people, people who, like Janet said, who are prepared to say, when asked whether, you know, 500,000 Iraqi children as a result of sanctions, the deaths of the 500,000 Iraqi children is worth it. I think it's worth it. These are the people, you know, who have their finger on the button, who have their finger on the button of doing something about the climate. And they're going to do nothing. You know, capitalism will, of course it will, they will try and survive. Of course they will try and survive, but it won't be, capitalism will do nothing in, you know, that does anything for the vast majority of human beings and the other, creatures that are part and parcel of this planet. They will do nothing. I'm angry. I'm sorry. I'm ranting on. I'll leave it there.
Well said. I mean, the history. I mean, the Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, there was two people. You had Castro and you had Che Guevara, and he was talking about nuking America, which would have been suicidal. And Khrushchev stopped him. So you've got the stupid people. And Trump's one of the stupidest leaders I've ever seen, really, you know. So, I mean, we've got this theory that people act rationally, but they don't in capitalism, and sometimes you just get stupid leaders that want to do stupid things. It was Khrushchev that stopped them nuking America, and that stopped a terrible nuclear war. So, I mean, these things continue, really.
Dougie, get the Ellsberg book because it really covers all that. You know, he was right in the thick of it throughout so much of not just the Cuban Missile Crisis, but so much else. It's called The Doomsday Machine, Douglas Ellsberg. I really recommend it for you. It's easy to read. He writes it very well, and it's incredibly informative.
Yeah, a lot of this nuclear stuff's automated, and since some of it's getting any human interaction, we've been close to dropping bombs in minutes here a few times. Luckily, humans have stopped it just in time.
Just a couple of points, if I may. Paddy, it's a ready party policy to stress the positive aspects of socialism. There's a long, very long party motion from 1991 instructing the editorial committee and all other committees to stress the positive aspect of the socialist case in a coherent and, you know, something like, before your time, though. But it's something that Adam could dig out and send it to you, because you people in this editorial committee could work on that and give a explanation of it to the writers that you have, people we have writing for you. That's one thing. Just very quickly on what Alan was saying, most of what he was saying is quite accurate, but it's very long term. There's no chance of stopping the waters rising. What's going to happen to all those people who are living within five feet of the, you know, when you rise 5 feet, where are they going to go? They're going to get killed off. That's not going to be able to put a positive spin on that.
Yeah, Mike, you're right. And it seems to me that what you said about putting the positive case for socialism, I'm sure that's what we all do our best to do. Part of that has to be critiquing what's happening now, so that, as Paddy said, we can then put in the positive. But and I also take Paddy's thing, what he's looking for is perhaps some more stressing the positive after or before pointing out all that's wrong with it. It's a very difficult thing to do, because the negatives are enormous. And what we are doing is saying, or what we are trying to say, is how much better things will be. And it's not easy for people to grasp that, I think, when they can see the negatives that they're living with and that's in and around them. actually, it's how we put that positive case to them for that what we are presenting to them is something which is just the exact opposite of what they've got, if you like, in most areas. So it's a very difficult subject that we're chatting about here. How actually we get the balance to show the vast negatives of capitalism and what we see as really positive situation of a socialist system.
Okay, let me try a challenge here. Anybody here who writes articles or thinks about writing articles, just try doing a topsy-turvy article. Just try that. Instead of the, 10 paragraphs about what's wrong with capitalism and the one paragraph at the end about why socialism will fix it without really explaining why, instead of that, try the 10 paragraphs about why socialism, how socialism can fix problems. And then the one paragraph at the end, along the lines that Brian said, it's the working class won't let us, or it's ideology that won't let us, or it's something that some reason that we need to get past. Try an upside down article and see how that works for anybody that has that feels like writing anything. Because I think if you look hard enough, we can always find reasons to be depressed. We can always find reasons to be pessimistic. There's lots and lots of that. The news media is throwing that stuff at us constantly. But I think if you looked hard enough, you could probably find just as many reasons to be optimistic about the possibilities of socialism. And I think you've got to make a choice whether you're going to be a pessimist or whether you're going to be an optimist. And you've got to ask yourself, which of those two is actually going to be better for what we want, to motivate the people that we want to motivate to get involved with us? Is it better for us to be pessimists, or is it better for us to be optimists, given that you could cut the evidence one way or the other? Now, I think one further thing that I think is true is that most of us in the party at some level are quite depressed about the fact that we're not getting anywhere. And I think that whether we mean to or not, we project that negativity and we project that frustration and we project that anger. And I think that we don't realize we're doing it. We call it realism, but what we're actually doing is projecting negative feelings and we're turning people off. And I think that that's what we need to look at. We need to ask ourselves quite seriously, what is it we want people to do? And how can we best motivate them to do that? And if that means changing how we are ourselves, I think we should be brave enough to do that. After all, we're asking the entire world to change how it is. We should be prepared to consider how we might change ourselves.
I remember, was it Bordiger who said, think pessimistically, act optimistically? I really agree with what Janet was saying. This is really complicated. And I think one of the issues there here is not to confuse being positive with a kind of mindless cheerfulness. That's not necessarily the same thing at all. I think that, I agree with Alan. I agree with Alan. I do think we live in really, really dangerous times. So I don't think we can turn our backs on that. But I also agree with Paddy that there are positive ways in which we can deal with this. We can think pessimistically, but we can act optimistically. We can say, look, this is the situation that we're actually facing. There is a solution. This is the solution. And we can go forward from there. So I don't think that we should be polarizing on this. I do think that there is a middle ground.
It was Gramsci, not Bordiga. Pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will.
That's it. Thank you, Howard.
Because we're the opposite, aren't we? Optimism of the intellect and pessimism of the will.
I've got to laugh. Thank you, Al. Yeah, I agree with what Richard said, the point that Paddy's just made, I think, is extremely valid. I was talking about, we need to face the reality of what's happening to the world on which we live. It's is changing, and there I really do believe that there is social dislocation and catastrophe coming down the road. The positive side of that is that we need to stress as socialists is that the argument, our argument and our belief is about how we can deal with that in a positive and humane way. You know, not with guns, not with rejection, not with barriers, but with inclusion. You know, as socialists, we're inclusive people. You know, we believe in finding the solutions that, that help majority, that help as many as possible. And, you know, I mean, I'm Paddy, I promise you, I'm going to look at seeing if I can't cobble something together which deals with the reality of what, you know, we as human beings are facing and what we could be doing, you know, in a socialist way to ameliorate what's coming down the road. So, you know, yeah, I will look at that.
But one problem of saying, you know, the end of the world is nigh. For instance, I can remember the CND, you know, there's going to be a nuclear war. So what people said to us then was, this is the problem we've got to deal with now. Socialism isn't on the agenda. And it's what the environmentalists are saying. You know, there's global warming is coming. We can't wait for socialism. We've got to do something now. So we've got to be careful about, well, I mean, we end up in a position of saying, capitalism isn't as bad as you think it is, which is a difficult position to, I mean, it might be true as Paddy's pointing out, but it's a difficult position to deal with when you're dealing with people who think, you know, there's going to be a nuclear war or that the you know, global warming's coming.
What you're saying there, Adam, you know, about nuclear war. I mean, nuclear war is actually a preventable thing. If we had a socialist society, we know nuclear weapons would disappear and conflict of that sort would disappear. The situation with the climate is somewhat different and, I've read an awful lot and of very credible people. I've no doubt others have done the same, but the people that I've read are of the opinion that we've actually passed the tipping point now and that we can ameliorate the problems that are coming, but we can't stop them. You know, and that's a tragedy. I mean, in one sense, at 75 years of age, I'm almost glad that, you know, I won't be around to see it, but I've got children and grandchildren. And it's, you know, they're going to have to deal with it. But, you know, if we are optimistic, and I am optimistic that if we can persuade enough people that a socialist world is possible, we can do an awful lot to ameliorate the problems. And a lot of people are going to die. A lot of people are going to, you know, as a result of all sorts of factors to deal with, to do with global, with climate disruption. But as socialists, we have a very, very positive, it'll never be a total solution, but we have a very, very positive way of ameliorating the problem for the majority of people. We won't be able to stop the catastrophe that's coming, I don't believe, but we can do a lot to ameliorate it, and we need to be talking about that.
Alan, can I just point out one thing as well? People are talking about global warming, it's going to be coming. It's already here. I mean, as you pointed out yourself, the ice shelves are melting and the sea levels are already rising. It's not coming, it's here. It's going to get worse.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a reality. I mean, people look at it and say, hey, we had snow in July or something. You know, that's not global warming. Yes, it is. It's perhaps better if we don't talk about global warming, but talk about, you know, human induced global, you know, climate disruption, I think is a better way of putting it across. You know, there's going to be areas where there's drought, areas where there's flooding, areas where there are, there's snow in August. I mean, and I don't mean in Antarctica either. You know, in the Northern Hemisphere, and you know, we need to be realistic about that. You know, that is not, we can't hide, we can't pretend that these things are not happening, that, that the world is not changing. You have to look out of the window, for God's sake. God, I beg your pardon. It really is, I find it, you know, we live in southern Turkey. I mean, fortunately for us, we're up in the mountains. We're at 1,200 meters. I mean, we're up where Ben Nevis is in the UK, if you like. And yet still, some afternoons, you know, are, you know, almost insufferable. For people down on the coast, it's awful. And yet that's where the breadbasket of this country is. So climate change is coming, and it's going to cause all sorts of problems. Inundation from, you know, sea level rises is going to move populations. Food production is going to be disrupted out of all proportion. It's a huge problem. We have to face it.
One thing we could maybe do is stop talking about it is climate change and the Holocene and all the rest of it, and call it what it is. It's a capitalocene. You know what I mean? All these problems have basically been caused by capital now. And there's only one solution. And the solution is not going to come out of the ecological movement. No, the only solution is going to come out of socialism. And it's the same goes for the bomb.
I have to say, Malcolm, I mean, Janet and I have been, I mean, we're not great socializers with the expat community. We choose to live outside of it and away from it for very good reasons. I don't need to go into that. But from time to time, we've had people that we know say, hey, you know, if you like, call it a garden party, you know, we're going to be having a few drinks and a little few bites to eat or something and socializing. And Janet and I have actually been told by some of these people, but if you come, you can't talk about politics. And we've quite bluntly turned around to the people and said, well, if you're going to censor me, you can fuck off. That's what you're faced with. We know that an awful lot of people.
Alan, couldn't talk about religion, football, or politics. That's what I grew up with.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge dealing with people. But I think you know, if we're not confrontational about it, but try to talk about it, and we have our arguments, if you like, our ducks in a row, I think we can, you know, we can have a lot of success in persuading people not to become socialists. I don't mean that, but to actually recognize the fact that the cause of almost all the ills in the world is the system that we live in. And that would be, huge advance in people's perceptions.
That's our biggest challenge, class consciousness. That's for another discussion.
Okay, anybody else got any thoughts on this before we think about bringing it to a close, before I get too dispirited by all this onslaught of realism?
Before you give up, you mean, yeah.
Well, that's the effect it's having on me, to be quite honest.
Don't get despondent, Paddy, you get even.
What this realism amounts to is you just think, oh, what's the point? You can't do anything.
Optimism. People are talking about the WRP and the constant revolution is going to be tomorrow. I know that better than most people probably. If you're going to talk about despondency when you're fed constant optimism, it never arises. That's one path to total despondency.
Yeah, but we've already disposed of that as a straw man argument, haven't we, Malcolm?
I think you're absolutely right, Paddy, anyway. Thanks very much indeed.
Talk straw man arguments. I think the anti-realistic things are straw man arguments. There's realism.
Anyway, probably, you know, one of the parts of the world that's going to gain in the short term from global warming is Britain. We'll have better summers and so on. So, and I think Mike is right that it's not going to happen for 50 or 60 years. We needn't worry. You needn't worry, sorry.
Well, I've got to go now, so I'm going to dash off. But thanks very much, Paddy. I mean, fundamentally, I'm in agreement with you. I think we do need to be more optimistic, optimistic realistically. Yeah, okay. See you all. See everyone. Thanks.
Well, optimistically, realistically, thank you all for coming.